You know, for most of American history, if a pope ever came to the United States, I mean, a mob would have taken him and lynched him on a tree. They would have taken the pope and just hung him. Yet, in a few months, the pope is coming to this country. And the only mobs he is going to face are going to be composed of the millions and millions of Americans who really love him. You know, whatever hatred American Protestants once had for the Roman Catholic Church and for the papacy, I mean, it's gone. It's just gone. I mean, today, Protestant leaders are talking about what a great man the Pope is and what a great institution and so on. Here's a quote from Billy Graham, probably the leading Protestant in America. And he was talking about the Pope during the Pope's last visit to America. Listen to what he said. This is a Protestant now. No other man in the world today could attract as much attention on moral and spiritual subjects as John Paul II. He is articulating what Catholic and Protestant churches have always held, the moral values of the Ten Commandments. That's interesting. The moral values of the Ten Commandments and the Sermons on the Mount. The Pope has reached millions of Protestants. Now, do you here today realize what a fulfillment of prophecy we are seeing happen around us? You know, I don't know how much, especially you kids, have studied this in school, but are you realizing what is happening as far as the most important events in the universe are taking place right now around us? You know, I honestly believe that Adventists, those who are studying, those who take their religion seriously, those who really want to follow the Lord and do what the Lord has called them to do, those who are studying, we're the only people in the world who really understand the significance of these events that are happening. We are the only ones that really understand what is going on right now and how prophecy is being fulfilled right before our eyes. And I want to look at this today a little while about these prophecies that are being fulfilled regarding the Pope. Now, I don't know how much here. Have you studied this in school? I mean, have you studied in school about the prophecies of Revelation and about what's going to happen between the United States and the papacy and the Catholics and the Protestants? I come up here with the sermon assuming that you have some background in this stuff. And if you don't know it, I mean, you're just not ready. You're not going to be ready for what's happening. But if you do know it, and when you do study these things, it is so exciting. You know, before I became an Adventist, and you know, I hitchhiked all over the world, was into skydiving, was into this, was into that, did all these wild and crazy things. And I used to look at Christians, and I used to think, what a pitifully boring existence. And I used to look at these people, and I used to think, man, I just can't imagine anything being more boring than being a Christian. I mean, it was just, ugh. But I can honestly say, in the past 8 years, 7 years that I have been an Adventist, I mean, things, I have never had more excitement, more thrills, more just exciting things happen to me in my life than I have in the past 7, 8 years. And part of this excitement comes from knowing what the message is and knowing what God has revealed to us as a people. And then watching these prophecies fulfilled right in front of you. I mean, there are times when I've laid in bed at night, just I can't even sleep. I got goosebumps thinking about the things that we're facing. And, you know, and one half of me is scared to death, because I think, am I ready? But the other half of me, I mean, it just puts fire in my blood to see these prophecies fulfilled. And if you are aware of what the prophecies teach, aware of our understanding of Revelation 13, if you've been reading the Bible, if you've been reading Spirit of Prophecy, you can't help but marvel at what we're seeing happen right before our eyes. I want to talk about the Pope for a minute. When John Paul comes to America, he is going to be warmly welcomed for the most part. Yet, for most part of this country's history, Catholics themselves weren't welcomed in this country, much less their Pope. As I said, it would have been unthinkable 100 years ago for a pope, or it's 75, or maybe even 50 years ago for a pope to have come to this country. There was a time when they would have literally killed him. Now, anti-Catholicism And, you know, and hatred of the papacy, it came over on the Mayflower. I mean, it was part of the Pilgrim's doctrinal package. I mean, hatred of the papacy was much a part of the Pilgrim's belief, as was the Trinity, Sunday keeping, the divinity of Christ. I mean, this was just part of their whole teaching. I mean, almost all the early colonies in America, they harassed Catholics. They didn't let them live there. I mean, in some places, Catholics were even killed in this country. They took them and they hung them because they hated Catholics so much. Now, eventually, things got so bad that a lot of the Catholics had to go to their own colony. They had to form their own colony called Maryland, which is where I live today, under the leadership of a fellow called Lord Baltimore. You've all heard of Baltimore? I mean, this was originally a Catholic colony where they went. It was the only place that they really weren't harassed because it was their own colony. Now, after the Revolutionary War and the Americans, so on, George Washington kicked the Redcoats out and sent them back to England, and the country was formed. I mean, the people in this country, they wanted a country that guaranteed religious liberty for everyone. And they had the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution declared, "Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof." And basically what this says is everybody in this country is going to have religious freedom. And it even included back then the hated Romanists, the hated Papists. Well, as a result of that, over the centuries, millions of Catholic people started pouring in to America. They came from Italy. They came from Germany. They came from Ireland, where there was a terrible potato famine and people were starving. And millions of them, they came over on their boats and they settled in the large Protestant seaboards of the United States on the East Coast. Well, there was a backlash against this. The Protestants in America were strongly against this, particularly the churches, in the churches. Sermon after sermon on Sunday, their Sabbath. I mean, these people would get up there and they would rail against the hated Romanists and the Papists, and there was talk of conspiracies to overthrow the country, and I mean, people warned about the Antichrist. I mean, it was common. I mean, a typical sermon in the North would warn about slavery, because they were against slavery, alcohol, prostitution, and Roman Catholicism. I mean, this was all the time. This was a constant thing, attacks against the Catholic Church. Now, anti-Catholic literature flourished at that time. Bookstores specialized in nothing but books and magazines against Catholics. There are all sorts of magazines, and were called the Protestant Vindicator, Priesthood Exposed, Priesthood Unmasked, The Menace, Anti-Romanist. And it's interesting because the Protestants, that one magazine I mentioned, you know who put that out? Seventh-day Adventists. Okay, anyway, there were books, even children's books were written against the Roman Catholic Church. A typical formula for a novel, the typical novel formula for these books would be some nice, sweet, innocent Protestant girl is kidnapped by a Catholic priest who takes her off to the monastery or to the wherever they were living, and she's locked in this gloomy cell where they abuse her and torture her or whatever until she's finally rescued, usually by some Bible-thumping Protestant who breaks in and steals her away and protects her from the horrors of the papacy. I mean, this was common stuff that was on all the time. Other books told gruesome tales of all kinds of prostitution and terrible things that were going on in the commons, and they sold like mad. Eventually, things led to violence. You realize they were killing Catholics in this country at one time? In 1834, a mob ransacked a convent. Mob ransacked a convent in the East, and just hundreds of them came. They tore the place down. They heard stories that there were cells in here where women were kidnapped and being tortured. So they came and they tore the place down. They didn't find any cells, so they got madder and just burned everything to the ground. And eventually a few people were arrested. It was a big trial, and I think everybody got off scot-free. One person spent a little bit of time in jail. I mean, there were anti-Catholic riots in Boston. 13 people were killed in Philadelphia and riots. In New York, the city was on fire in certain sections because of riots against Catholic people. I mean, there was a real animosity and hatred in this country towards Roman Catholics. Eventually, one time, too, when the Pope sent a block of marble for the Washington Monument, all these different countries sent a block of marble for the monument, a mob came and took that block of marble and they threw it in the Potomac River. It's probably sitting down there right now. This is how much the people hated the Catholic Church in this country. Eventually, it took on a political character. And there were actually political parties that were formed whose main purpose was to be against the Catholic Church. And they'd had a lot of success in the early 30s and the early 40s. They went on, and they had success. In one presidential election in the 1852s, these parties claimed to have controlled nearly half the popular vote at the presidential election. Their candidates made it to state offices. They made it to governorships. They made it to the United States Senate, the United States Congress. I mean, there was a strong movement against it. And eventually they faded out and another party would come in. And they would fade out and another party came in. And finally, around the turn of the century, the Ku Klux Klan. Everybody here knows about the Ku Klux Klan. This was formed, and the main people that the Ku Klux Klan was against were Jews, blacks, and Roman Catholics. They really hated Roman Catholics. But you know something? Things have changed. Instead of being hated and attacked by the Ku Klux Klan, do you realize, and for those of you who know some history, you'll realize how incredible what I'm going to say, that today Roman Catholics are recruited into the Ku Klux Klan. There are now Catholics in the Klan. One fellow recently made big news as a Roman Catholic. He was the head of a Klan organization, and he said he saw no conflict of interest between his beliefs as a member of the Ku Klux Klan and being a Roman Catholic. This caused quite a bit of thing. I mean, here was an organization that was formed against Catholics, and yet today they've got Catholics in them. Okay, another fellow said that in New York, half the membership of the Klan in New York City, or in an area in New York, are made up of Roman Catholics. I mean, again, I don't know what this means to you, especially if you're young, but when you understand the history of the Ku Klux Klan and what it was all about, I mean, it's almost as if saying the Nazi Party is now accepting Jews for membership. I mean, this is what you're seeing here, the fact that now the Ku Klux Klan lets Roman Catholics in there. Now, there's been a lot of other changes as well. In 1951, President Harry Truman wanted to get an ambassador to the Vatican. Some of you here, some of you older people probably remember that. Well, it caused such an outrage. It caused such a stink. I mean, the nation rebelled against it, and Truman tried for 2 years to get that through. He tried for 2 years, and eventually there was so much opposition against it. So many people said, no, we don't want this. It became so politically damaging that eventually he said, forget it. You know, there was too much opposition to it. Well, I'm sure all of you here remember just a number of years ago when President Reagan wanted to get an ambassador to the Vatican. And oh, there was an outrage, but it lasted all about a week. People squawked this and that. It was in the news for about a week, and then you never heard of it again. And some people went and they sued the government. They tried to take the government to court, you know, to court against this being a violation of the separation of church and state. And eventually the court shot it down. No. It made it all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court wouldn't even hear the case. And as it is now, we now have an ambassador to the Vatican. But the amazing thing about this, and again, for those of you who understand the prophecy, you know what I'm talking about, and you can see how what this means. The amazing thing is not so much that we have an ambassador to the Vatican. Things haven't changed so much. I mean, things aren't going to change so much in our relationship to the Catholic Church just because we have an ambassador there. The amazing thing is the American public's change in their attitude. The average American thought an ambassador to Vatican, who cares? Nobody cares. See, this shows the change. And again, those of you who are studying your Bible, those of you who are following Spirit of Prophecy, those of you who are serious about your religion, you should know very, very clearly and see what it's just an electrifying fulfillment of prophecy we're seeing here. Now I'll talk a little bit about the John Kennedy when he ran for president. You know, when John Kennedy ran for president, people were very, very uptight. The thought of a Roman Catholic in the White House. I mean, special groups were formed. People were talking about the threat to America and the danger to our heritage. And people were very, very uptight about this. I mean, Kennedy had to go out of his way. He had to go out of his way to distance himself from the papacy. He had to go out of his way to show that he wasn't linked to Rome. He didn't want to be involved with Rome. I mean, in other words, it would have been political suicide for him. Well, today, presidents are going out of their way to be linked to the papacy. They're going out of the way. They want to be seen with him. So, you know, it's considered good politics to be seen with the Pope or to be linked with the Pope. You know, when Geraldine Ferraro was running for vice president, you know, she was a Roman Catholic. That wasn't an issue. Nobody cared about her being a Catholic. People weren't interested in her ties to Rome. They were more interested in her husband's ties to the mafia than they were her ties to Rome. It's not an issue. If Ted Kennedy were to seriously make a bid for the presidency, or Mario Cuomo, or some of these other people, the issue of them being a Roman Catholic wouldn't even be an issue. Again, this is showing you how things are changing. How things are changing in this country and how prophecy is fulfilling. Now, I think the most dramatic example of the change that has happened in America towards the Catholic Church was when the Pope visited here in 1979. Do people here remember that? People here, I first met Adventists and first started studying with Adventists right when he came. As a matter of fact, the first time in my life I ever studied Revelation 13 was the week John Paul II visited America. And I've got to tell you, it made a heavy impression on me. But anyway, here comes the Pope. He comes to America, and people just went crazy over him. They went crazy. I mean, generally, the secular press is generally inclined to treat religion about as seriously as it does roller derby scores. You know, the press doesn't care about religion, and yet they went ape over the Pope. I mean, they just couldn't say good enough things about him. I mean, headline after headline raved about the Pope, this magical Pope they called him, this great religious leader. I mean, they went on Time magazine, had on the cover John Paul, superstar. I mean, one newspaper, the Chicago Sun-Times, had a big headline, "A City Nestles in the Hands of a Gentle Pilgrim." The Washington Post, I live in Washington, D.C., I read the Washington Post religiously. Now, the Washington Post is definitely a left-wing newspaper. I mean, they are the farthest thing in the world from religious conservatism you'll find. I mean, these guys are definitely left-wingers. And yet they devoted a special 32-page magazine just for the Pope's visit. And they called it a special commemorative publication honoring the visit of His Holiness Pope John Paul II. Again, and unless you're aware of some of these things, I mean, for a newspaper like the Post to do that is really amazing, because, I mean, they are about as anti-religious as anything you're going to find anywhere. And wherever he went, crowds swarmed around the Pope. Protestant leaders praised him. Politicians wanted to get their pictures taken with him. I mean, more than 1 million people came to his mass in Philadelphia. I mean, this is in the past, when the Pope came to America, I mean, he just stayed at a hotel. I mean, he didn't really go anywhere. He spoke at the UN. I mean, they never would have dreamed of letting the Pope come to the White House when he came earlier. LBJ went and visited him at the Waldorf Astoria in New York. They never would have let him come to the White House. And yet the Pope, when he came in 1979, the climax of the Pope's visit. Again, if you don't know history, you can't see the implications of this. But for those who have studied a bit of history, the climax of the visit, they bring the Pope of Rome, they bring him into the White House, and he's standing on the lawn of the White House, and a Southern Baptist president, Jimmy Carter, calls him to his face, "Your Holiness." People, this is prophecy being fulfilled. Here's a quote from Time magazine. Again, these people don't know zilch about the truth. Listen to what Time magazine said, commenting on the Pope's visit. He said, "Even after we have seen it, the act of bringing a Pope in the front door of the White House, just like he was an Arab with oil, is nothing short of a miracle." prophecy again, because these people know the history, but they don't know the prophecies. We, again, I say this before, I say it again, Seventh-day Adventists, those who are studying, those who are even semi-cognizant of what they believe or why they believe, are the only people in the world who really understand the significance of these events. Now, I want to give you a real quick history on some of this stuff, just to help you understand what has happened, why this change has come. Now, we all know that for over 1,000 years, the Catholic Church, this was it. This was the religion in Europe. This was all Christianity. There were a few pockets of resistance here and there, and the popes had absolute power and so forth. Now, there had been a lot of corruption. There had been a lot of corruption, and there were problems in the church. Things were starting to come apart, and Martin Luther came along. We all heard of Martin Luther, and Luther came along and struck the blow that really sent everything collapsing. Now, real quickly with Luther, what happened with Luther was one day this fella came to his town selling indulgences. You know what an indulgence is? If you committed a sin, no matter how bad it was, you give this guy money and he'll give you a sheet of paper telling you you're forgiven for your sins. Okay? I don't care. Matter of fact, this guy Tetzel came to where Martin Luther was living and he promised them that these indulgences were so powerful that even if a person had sexual relations with the Virgin Mary, you give them money, they'll give you this indulgence, and you are forgiven for that sin. And it worked out great. I mean, the popes made a lot of money, and the people felt they were forgiven of their sins, and everybody was happy. Well, Luther just went bonkers over this. And then he nailed his 95 theses on the door, and thus the Reformation began, and we all know the story, you know, Luther at the Diet of Worms, when the Catholic Church told him to come to Worms and recant. It was interesting because here was Luther was going to have to meet all these great leaders of Europe. They wanted him to recant. They wanted him to give up what he was saying and just go back to the church. And this is what Luther said. He said, "This shall be my recantation at Worms. Previously I said the Pope is the vicar of Christ. I recant. Now I say the Pope is the adversary of Christ and the apostle of the devil." So Luther recanted. But anyway, Luther just said, no way. He stuck to his guns. I'm hopeful we know the story. Now, anyway, listen what Luther wrote. As the Reformation progressed, I want to read you some of Martin Luther's statements. He says, "I don't know whether the Pope is the Antichrist himself or his apostle, so greatly is Christ crucified in them." Later on, however, he didn't have any more questions about that. He knew. He said, "You must be armed with Scripture so you can not only call the Pope the Antichrist, but also know how to prove it so clearly that you could die with this conviction and stand against the devil in death." In a tract he wrote called "Against the Roman Papacy as an Institution of the Devil," this is what Luther wrote. He says, "The Pope is not and cannot be the head of the Christian Church and cannot be God or Christ's vicar. Instead, he is the head of the accursed church of all the worst scoundrels of the earth, a vicar of the devil, an enemy of God, an adversary of Christ, a destroyer of Christ's churches, an arch-church thief and church robber of the key and all the goods of both the church and the temporal lords, a murderer of kings and an inciter of bloodshed, a brothel keeper over all brothel keepers and all vermin, even that which cannot be named, the Antichrist, the man of sin." And he goes on and on and on. I mean, I've got statements, what Luther says about the Pope, that I couldn't read in public. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. I mean, it's hilarious, really. I mean, he had no tact whatsoever. I mean, if he didn't like it, he just blasted you. Another place he says, "We are convinced that the papacy is the seat of the true and real Antichrist." And he goes on and on. I've got a stack in my office of Xeroxes that I've taken of Luther's statements about the papacy. You know, at one point, you know, Luther drank a lot. You know, and when he was getting old, he was getting sick and his kidneys were giving out on him. Did I tell you this, what he said about earlier, about what Luther said? He was on his deathbed. Oh, no, this was in Europe where I said this. Okay. Luther was on his deathbed, or he thought he was dying because his kidneys were giving out, and he's in a lot of pain, and he could hardly move, and he says, "I'm too old for anything, except an occasional whack at the Pope." You know, because he just railed against the Pope. Well, anyway, what happened was this belief that the papacy, that Rome was the Antichrist, this became a fundamental tenet of the whole Protestant Reformation. They all believed it. Every last one of them, they believed that the papacy was the Antichrist of the Bible. Philip Melanchthon, you ever hear of Melanchthon? Another famous reformer. He said, "It is most manifest and true without any doubt that the Roman pontiff with his whole order and kingdom is the very Antichrist." Erlich Zwingli said, "For I know that in it the papacy works the power of the devil, that is the Antichrist." John Calvin, talking about the papacy, said, "The head of that cursed and abominable kingdom, the Antichrist, in the Western Church, we affirm to be the Pope." And I can go on and on with all these guys. They were unanimous in naming the papacy as the Antichrist. I want to read you a quote from a historian here, Froome. You might have heard of him before. Listen to what he says. He says, "The reformers in all lands had been unanimous in applying most of the prophecies of Antichrist to the papacy. In fact, it was this united Protestant stand on the papacy that became the spring of their reformatory action. It was this clear understanding of the prophetic symbols that led them to protest against Rome with such extraordinary courage and effectiveness, nerving them to break with her and to resist her claims even unto death. These positions were, moreover, shared by hundreds of thousands and were adopted by rulers and people. Under their influence, whole nations abjured allegiance to the Bishop of Rome." So they all were united on this. And for almost four centuries, the Protestants, the Anglicans, the Baptists, the Presbyterians, though they were divided over many issues, though they were killing each other, the Protestants were killing each other over different issues, there was a couple of things that they were united on: righteousness by faith and the papacy as the Antichrist. I mean, this doctrine came over to America, came over with the Pilgrims. I mean, Isaac Newton saw the papacy as the Antichrist in Europe. In America, John Cotton, Roger Williams, Cotton Mather, Jonathan Edwards all warned of Rome as Antichrist. This was echoed from Protestant pulpits in Protestant colleges for the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, and even early 20th centuries. Book after book was written by Protestants naming Rome as the Antichrist. Now, it's interesting, today Protestants are still writing lots and lots of books on the Antichrist. Some of the best-selling books in the evangelical Christian world today all deal with the Antichrist power. But it's interesting, because they don't mention the Pope or Papal Rome in any of them. Instead, they're talking about the Jews. They're talking about Israel. They're talking about Jerusalem. They're talking about war in the Middle East. I mean, these people don't condemn the Antichrist power. They don't even know who he is. They don't know who he is. Just 2 days ago, I was sitting in the car listening to the radio here. And I was listening to this Protestant minister give a long sermon about the Antichrist power. And he's speculating, oh, he's going to make a pact with the Jews, and he's going to set up his temple in Jerusalem, and there's going to be the Russians are going to come down and attack Israel. And he's speculating about all this stuff, which is absolute, utter nonsense. They don't know who the Antichrist is. Oh, they've got all sorts of speculations. I mean, people thought everyone from Guru Maharaji, remember I talked to you the other day about the Guru? They thought he's the Antichrist. Henry Kissinger, Nelson Rockefeller, Sun Myung-moon, Ronald Reagan, they have all come under suspicion. Some people think the Antichrist is a computer in Belgium. Jimmy Swaggart, our good evangelist friend Jimmy Swaggart, thinks the Antichrist is going to be a Syrian Jew. Now, it's interesting because the system that identifies the papacy as the Antichrist is called futurism. And this is the dominant belief, the dominant theology of almost the whole conservative Protestant world today. They almost all, in one form or another, have accepted this futurism. But you know about futurism? You know where futurism came from? It's so interesting because this belief that puts the papacy as some, or puts the Antichrist as some future power that's going to rise up in the last days and persecute the Jews, and there's going to be in the Middle East and so on. You know where this came from? This came from the Catholics. This came from the Catholics all the way back in the 1500s. Because what was happening was, as I read you earlier, all these people, they're breaking away from Rome. They were breaking away. They were just forgetting about the Pope. They were turning away from it. So they needed to do something. They needed to do something to get everybody's eyes off the papacy as the boogeyman of the Bible. So what they did in 1580, look how far back we go now. A Spanish Jesuit named Francisco Rivera published the very first book on futurism. The Antichrist, he said, was not some system or dynasty like the papacy, but the Antichrist was going to be an individual who would arise in the very end of time. An individual who would bring on a 3.5-year period of tribulation that would center on the Jews in Palestine. I mean, I can almost guarantee you pick up any evangelical book today on Bible prophecy, and this is what they talk about. Okay? And I've even got some quotes. Well, I'm not going to even read these quotes from Catholic theologians saying that futurism started with Rivera. This belief became the Catholic interpretation. And for 3 centuries, the Catholics expanded this belief. They modified it. They amplified it. They polished it. But it really made no headway with the Protestants at all. The Protestants for 3 centuries just shot it down in book after book after book, shot it down for the fallacy that it was. But eventually, it took time. It took time, but slowly but surely, this belief, this futuristic belief, started to seep into the Protestant world. It started in the 1800s in England. It started to creep in bit by bit with a group of people there called the Plymouth Brethren. This belief, putting the Antichrist in the future. And it started there. And then it started to spread bit by bit by bit. It started spreading around. Now, by the early 20th century, the Schofield Reference Bible. Anybody here ever heard of the Schofield Reference Bible? This was the most widely circulated Bible commentary in history. And what it is, it's a King James version of the Bible. And they got all these footnotes underneath it. Well, people just read the footnotes as if they're reading the Bible. They take the footnotes as seriously as the Bible. Well, this reference Bible was very, very popular. I said it was the most widely circulated one in history. And this thing espoused futurism more than any other book up to that time. This thing reached millions and millions and millions of Americans. It reached the seminaries. It reached the colleges in America, this belief on futurism. Now, finally, the undisputed high priest of futuristic prophecy is Hal Lindsey. Have you heard the name Hal Lindsey? The book, The Late Great Planet Earth? I'd be amazed if there was somebody here who has never heard of that book. This book he wrote in the 70s. It has gone through more than 40 printings. It has been translated into 31 languages and has sold an unbelievable 18 million copies. I mean, this book and other books by Lindsey makes him the best-selling seer of end-time events, I think, since John the Revelator penned the book of Revelation on the island of Patmos. But he has brought this futuristic belief to millions and millions of people all over the world. He's brought it into their homes because it was so simple, anybody could pick it up and read it. Today, the Jesuit scheme of counterinterpretation, the Jesuit attempt to infiltrate the Protestant world with futurism, was far, far more successful than I think they ever, in their wildest dreams, could have imagined. I mean, the belief that we have as Adventists today regarding Rome, we are in a teeny minority of people. There are some other people out there who still believe that. They don't have all the insights on it like we do, but there's just a handful of them. The whole world, for the most part, is not looking towards Rome at all. They're looking to the Middle East for these prophecies to be fulfilled. Today, even the biggest names in American Christianity, Jerry Falwell is a hardcore futurist. I mean, really hardcore futurist. Even Billy Graham has futurism in his thinking. Good old Pat Robertson, our would-be president, hardcore futurist. T. Jim LaHaye, Jimmy Swaggart, all these big names, they all accept futurism in one form or another. Now this acceptance of futurism, this has been what I believe one of the biggest factors in helping to fulfill those prophecies. Because we know from the prophecies, and you should know this, that a time is going to come when the Catholics and Protestants in this country are going to join hands together. Okay? They're going to come together on the points that they have in common. This is prophecy. This is prophetic. But think about it for a minute. I mean, as they're coming together now, those of you who are studying could see them coming together. There's all these ecumenical dialogues with Catholics and Protestants, and they're coming together here and there and so on. Now, do you think, though, do you think that all these Protestants who are so interested in coming together with the Catholics, do you think they would do that if they really believed the Roman Catholic Church was the Antichrist? Do you think they would want to hold ecumenical dialogues with the Antichrist power? Of course not. I mean, who could imagine the Pope coming to, quote, Protestant America when millions and millions and millions, a vast majority of its citizens, saw him as the biblical man of sin? No way. They wouldn't let him come here. Would a Southern Baptist president, Jimmy Carter, would he shake hands on the lawn in front of millions of Americans with the biblical son of perdition? Would he have done that? Of course not. Would Protestant leaders sing hymns with the Pope when he was here if they saw him as representing the harlot of Revelation 17? I mean, would Billy Graham knowingly call the leader of the Antichrist power the moral leader of the world? Of course not. I mean, this is what futurism has done. Now, I'm going to give you what I think is the best example of how futurism has made America ripe for these prophecies. When the Pope comes to America in a few months, he's going to take part in a big ecumenical interfaith prayer meeting. The leaders of 25 different Protestant denominations are going to be there. Okay, they're all going to be there with the Pope and praying together and talking about love and unity and so on and so forth. But there are going to be some people who are not going to be there. There's one denomination or one group of people decided they're going to boycott the meeting. And not only are they going to boycott the meeting, they're going to stand outside the meeting with signs protesting the meeting. And these people are historicists. They're like what we are. We understand prophecy as the Antichrist as being this power back in history, not some future power that's going to come. But these Baptists, because they're just part of the Baptists, they're not all of them, just a small group of these Baptists, they're going to stand outside the meeting, which they're going to boycott, and they're going to have a sign that they're going to hold up. And you know what the sign is going to say? It's going to say in big letters across, Antichrist. See, those people who haven't been duped by futurism, who haven't bought this line of theological nonsense, they know. But the point is, there are very, very few of them left. And I'm even sad to say that futurism is creeping into the Adventist church as well. You listen, you'll hear it in our churches as well. Now, there's been a few other factors, too, that have helped bring about the change, which is opening America up to fulfill these prophecies. I mean, first of all, the Bible no longer plays a dominant role in our society. I mean, almost every home has a Bible, a dusty Bible somewhere on the shelf. But if you don't read it or study it or take it too seriously, you're not going to get too concerned about some prophecies concerning some mystical man of sin. I mean, you're not going to care about it. I mean, some churches in America are more interested in supporting leftist revolutions in South America than they are, you know, studying and getting involved in prophecy. Today, there's not this kind of rigid kind of Bible study anymore. Everything is very relative and open. You know, you can sort of believe out of the Bible what you want to believe, take what you want, you know, throw out the rest. What if it means that for you, then that's true for you. If it means something different for Joe Blow over here, it's true for Joe Blow. I mean, so this sort of has sort of watered everything down. Now, we have to be honest, too. The Catholic Church has made some changes. There has been some changes in the church. I mean, it took them until 1965, but they finally came out in favor of religious liberty. I mean, for centuries, I mean, they burned people. I mean, the popes railed against this whole concept. of religious liberty. Well, now they said it's okay to believe, you know, according to your conscience and so on and so forth. But for centuries, they railed against that. Okay? They've also encouraged Bible study. You know, because the Protestants are so strong on the Bible, and you've got a church here that doesn't let their people read the Bible, that's going to get a lot of antagonism. I mean, they used to kill you if you read your Bible. Today, you're encouraged to study the Bible. Okay? So that's some helpful changes that they made. In the past, they would never have any talk. There was no idea of any kind of ecumenical dialogue, any kind of coming together with Protestants. I mean, we were the arch heretics and so on and so forth, and, you know, we just had a recant of what we've done and come back to Rome or forget it. Well, they've changed that line now, and now they're open, and now they want us to talk with the Protestants. Okay, so these are things that have helped, but the most remarkable turnabout, and this is very, very interesting, the most remarkable change about the Catholic Church has been toward Martin Luther. Toward Luther, the man who called the Pope the scum of all the scoundrels in Rome. Okay, this is just some of the words that Luther used for the Pope. I can't tell you some of the other ones. But anyway, for centuries, Martin Luther was consigned to the deepest recesses of hell in Catholic theology. I believe the Catholics used to teach that only two people right now were really burning in hell. Judas Iscariot and Martin Luther. Okay, I mean, he was attacked, he was vilified, he was condemned by the church. You know what they taught? For centuries, they told their people that Martin Luther was the offspring of his mother's intimacy with the devil. That's what they taught their people for centuries. Now, finally, around the 20th century, people were getting too, the faithful were getting too sophisticated to buy that lie, so they had to come up with something else. So they labeled Luther a psychopath. They labeled him a schizophrenic, a paranoid. They said his mind was being destroyed from syphilis, and they said he was a drunkard. I mean, they just blasted him all that they could, you know, in a way that modern audiences would accept. Today, however, right now, that's all changed. I mean, I'm not going to say Luther's ready for sainthood, but they're already a total about faith on Martin Luther, and there's even talk of having his excommunication revoked. Today, Catholic scholars are lauding Martin Luther as a great Catholic and a loyal child of the church. They're saying he was a loyal Catholic. One Catholic scholar called him one of the greatest witnesses to the Catholic faith. I've got another Catholic scholar here who said Luther's actions was beneficial to the Catholic Church. Here's another Catholic scholar, what they're saying about Luther. He said Luther was a Catholic reformer, a defender of the traditional Catholic faith against an un-Catholic error that was widespread in the German church of his day. I mean, today the Catholic scholars are basically saying, look, Luther was a religious man. He wanted to do some good things, but he was derailed into this destructive criticism because the church back then wouldn't take hold of the reforms that he advocated. I mean, this is such a radical break from a man whom they consigned to the deepest recesses of hell, along with Judas, you know, for centuries. Even the Pope, I'll never forget when this happened. I was in New York City, and I picked up a New York Times. And I looked at this headline, and it said, Pope praises Martin Luther on Protestant anniversary. And I'm telling you, I mean, right now I get goosebumps even thinking about what happened. I mean, the first thing that came through my mind was utter excitement. I mean, look at this. I mean, this is prophecy fulfilling. I mean, this. And I remember I got this excitement, and then yet a second after that, I suddenly realized, we're facing it. It's coming. I mean, it's happening. And I got scared to death. Because, I mean, this is prophecy fulfilling right in front of us. Now, I think perhaps the best example, and I still can't believe this. I mean, I still can't. If I hadn't read it and seen it in my own eyes, I wouldn't have believed it. I think probably the best example of the change in the Catholic attitude towards Martin Luther occurred during the 500th anniversary of his birthday. In Washington, D.C., they had a big celebration of Martin Luther's birthday. The biggest celebration they had anywhere. They had television cameras there. It was for television. They had orchestras singing Luther's hymns. They were having dramatic portrayals of various events of Luther's life, including, and for those of you who know the history, including the Diet of Worms. This is where Luther basically just told the Pope and the rest of them to go, you know, to forget it. I'm going to do what I want. You know, this is where the real break came. They had this whole hoopla, all this whole thing on television, everything. And you know where they held it? You know where they held it? At the Catholic National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C. I mean, that's, you know, celebrating the Diet of Worms in a Roman Catholic church. I mean, it's really, it's unbelievable. No wonder even that man in Time magazine would say it's a miracle, talking about what's happening. Okay, but whatever the reasons, and there's probably many more, American Protestantism's basic distrust of the Catholic Church, it's vanished. It's gone for the most part. Oh, the only people you have railing against the Catholics anymore, you've got some of these ultra-right-wing cuckoo bird groups, some of these, you know, what's his name, Tony Alamo, and some of these guys putting up posters, you know, and so on. But for the most part, nobody believes that way anymore. Everybody has pretty much made peace with the papacy in one form or another. I want to read you a couple of quotes as I get ready to close from secular sources, from non-Adventist sources, from people who have no conception at all of what these what these events mean and how these prophecies are being fulfilled. Here's a quote from the Washington Post. Now again, if you don't know the prophecies, you're not going to catch the impact of this. And if you don't catch the impact of this, this should let you know that you don't know the prophecies, and it might maybe spur you on, hey, to wake up, just to snap out of the stupor and know what you believe. But here's a quote from the Washington Post. American Catholicism today enjoys an unprecedented opportunity to play a major role in the shaping of American policy. American Catholicism has made enormous strides in recent years. It is finally in a position to play a major role in a society that desperately needs the kind of intellectual and spiritual leadership it can provide. Okay, see, in the past, the Catholics stayed out of politics. They laid low. They laid low because they were afraid that they would be seen as these kind of seditious pawns of the Pope, so they stayed out of it. But it's changed. The whole situation has changed. Here's a quote from Archbishop John J. O'Connor. In the U.S. over the past two centuries, Catholics have felt like second-class citizens. Now we come more and more to recognize not only our rightful role as citizens, but our responsibility as church leaders to contribute to the body politic. Here's another quote from the Washington Post. The Roman Catholic Church, until recently a relatively quiet voice in national affairs, has become a highly visible player on the political scene in the past 2 years. Again, for those of you who are aware, this is prophecy fulfilling right in front of our eyes. Now, I want to read you the last quote. This last quote, I'm going to end with this. This is a quote from a Catholic newspaper. It's called The Wanderer. I got it to my office for a long time, and suddenly they stopped sending it to me. I don't know why. Maybe they saw something I wrote, you know, about the church or something, but I haven't gotten anyone. But these guys are really reactionary right-wing Catholics. I mean, they are like the fascist branch of the Catholic Church in America. But they were talking. They were talking about the change that's happening in America towards the Catholic Church, because the Catholics are seeing it themselves as well. They're seeing it themselves as well. And listen to what he says here. This article says. He says, the Rubicon has been crossed. The consequence of this, talking about this, what's happening with the Catholic Church in America, the consequence of this, I think, now listen to this, will be nothing less than the beginning of the Catholic era in American history. See what's happening? Now again, I'm not going to go on anymore. I mean, I've got a lot more. I'm not even going to go into how they're linking together with the Protestants politically, with the new right, and how this also is just another fulfillment of prophecy right before our eyes. But the point I want to make is no matter what attitude you have, you might care less about all of this, but it's happening. It's happening. And you can choose to close your eyes to it. Or at the same time, if you open your eyes, you will realize what a blessed privilege that we have. What a privilege. What a responsibility Because I'm telling you, I talk to Christians in other denominations. They don't have the vaguest idea of these things. And we have been blessed. We have been blessed with an understanding of these things. But along with that understanding comes a responsibility. So my prayer is that you'll just start looking into these things yourself. And I'm hopeful that some of this stuff helps you realize and see how prophecy is being fulfilled, how Jesus has laid everything out for us. You know, I really think, what more could He have done for us than He's already done? Now the question is now, He's done it for us. Are we going to accept what He's done? Are we just going to make, as I talked before, about those choices and go our own way? It's really, really exciting what is happening, but you've got to tap into it, or it's going to go right by you and you're going to find yourself unprepared. Let's pray. Lord God, I'm just thrilled as I see these prophecies fulfilled before us. And Lord, it's just so exciting just to pick up the paper and to see these things and to realize, Lord, that it's happening. We can argue, we can make excuses, we can do whatever we want, Lord. We can close our eyes to it, our minds to it, our hearts to it. But Lord, it's really, really happening. We're living in it. And Father, I just pray that we'll be prepared when these things come upon us, that the day of the Lord will not take us like a thief in the night, but that we'll follow, we'll be praying, we'll be studying, and that we'll be prepared to meet You, because these are all signs that Your coming is soon. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen.
You have been listening to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright American Cassette Ministries, all rights reserved. To order CDs or audio cassettes of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 1-800-233-4450. International calls, please dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. There you will discover the largest selection of genuine Adventist preaching available. American Cassette Ministries is not a one-man band. It's an orchestra of outstanding speakers who are all on the same theological page. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Cassette Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? Our email address is info@americancassette.org. We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and financial support are important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.